bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God.
Deep to right field. Way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk-off home run. Grand slam.
Hello and welcome in everyone to episode 179 of the Bases Loaded Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Kurland. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. Joined as always. I say as always, as if like there's these days there's no chance of you not being on with me, George, because it's either you or I don't record. So I guess it is as always these days. George Montanez, you can follow on Twitter at @Roto_Nino. George, what's going on, man?
What's up? Yep, as always, it's always. Fun to get back on the mic. I mean, this is nice to just get together and catch up anyways every time we do this. So, you know.
Yeah, we text every day. We talk and we have a lot of stuff coming up that's going to be changing with the Patreon. So we're going to be updating some stuff in the off season. Until then, you know, we're still doing our thing, some relief pitcher stuff write up. I do like 3 to 4 lineup write ups a week. And so we're still chugging along there. It's patreon.com/SK playbook. Don't forget to check us out there. That's where most of our content is these days, especially mine. That's pretty much where I put everything. And I'm going to be doing, I decided I'm going to do an in season, almost how I go team by team looking at lineups. I'm going to go team by team keeping up. Remember how I was trying to do that usage chart last year? I can't do that chart again. It just takes too much time. But what I can do is instead of sitting there and making out a chart, I'm going to make notes. So every week I'm going to break down some notes of usage and highlight, you know, some changes in usage, up, down, bad, good, otherwise, you know, just to try to keep on top of things. And I think that'll help everyone involved because especially early in the season for football, you tend to have a lot of changing of the guard, changing of roles, new offensive schemes, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone's trying to figure things out. So I think that's what I'm going to do for football, and I'm going to do that for the Patreon. So we're going to start transitioning into some football content as well. Don't worry, the baseball content sticks around up until the playoffs. And then, of course, early draft season, we'll be back to talking baseball before November for 2023, as we always do every year, because we start drafting in November of 2022.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's what's going on with us on that side of things. But tonight we're just going to break down some playing time stuff. We're going to be looking at the AL specifically because, spoiler alert, that's what I did for the write-up today. I haven't gotten to the NL yet. So we're going to try to record again tomorrow, but no promises because we tend to come up short on those. but we're going to try to do the NL playing time outlooks tomorrow. But a little bit of news and notes before we get into that. And, of course, George has his bullpen notes to talk about as well. But some news notes, the Tampa Bay Rays are getting healthy, and it's a great time for them to get healthy. They got Harold Ramirez back, started 2 straight, so the playing time is there. So that's kind of breaking down some of the AL right there. I was actually watching to see if he got to start tonight against a righty, which he did. So getting a start against a righty already tells us he's back, at least it suggests he should be back to more of an everyday role instead of a platoon, which he had an everyday role, you know, prior to the injury. But the Rays are 10 games out of first place. And if they get Margot and Wander back, even though Wander kind of worries me because he had a setback during his rehab initially with the hand, but they're saying that he could start back up Tuesday with the rehab. So what, today? And then, or yesterday, I should say. And then be back as early as this weekend, him and Margot, that would be a nice added boost to this team. That's only 10 back. Could they sneak you? The Yankees are trending the wrong direction. Could we see the Rays sneak up and take over the division?
I don't know. It's going to be a lot to overcome. 9 games in you know, maybe what we got like 6-7 weeks left.
The Yankees are like 11 and something since the All-Star. I saw the stat today. They're pretty big, like pretty bad run right now. I'd have to look up the exact run, but if they sustain that run, they're in trouble. Like the Rays can make a push for it. I know it's a long shot. It's a lot of games. The Yankees are 8-17 since the All-Star break. That's what it was. 8-7. Yeah. So if they continue that type of skid, we can talk about one of those like, oh my goodness, 10 games, but not if they're only winning one out of every two games, you know? So one out of every three, I should say. No, two, I guess. No, one of three. Right now it's like a 1 out of every 3 pace. I can't do math. Math is hard. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's just interesting to watch. It's more of like from a real fan type of side of things. I have no skin in the game, no bets or anything, but it's fun to watch stuff like that happen, especially when you have a division where I can't remember the last time the Red Sox were at the bottom of it. Like the Red Sox are the only team in that division with a sub-500 record. The Orioles have a 500 record, actually above 500 record, and they're fourth in the division, but they're only fourth because of one game. They're one game out of being second. That division is super tight right there.
Yeah, and the Orioles are right there in the thick of things too. That's crazy.
Can the Orioles make the playoffs? Like, can we see that happen? I would be so excited. I'd be so awesome.
Yeah, I thought I heard some saw some stuff about, you know, them possibly promoting Gunnar Henderson for the last stretch run. I mean, yeah, that would be awesome.
Well, here's the thing. I'm a Marlins fan. I root for chaos and bad teams, but the Orioles aren't a bad team. They're just a young team, and they're coming together, and they brought up DL Hall. If they bring up Henderson, they have Adley. This team, you know, and honestly, if you go look at Jorge Mateo, that's my boy, obviously. He's been crushing it for the last month. Power, speed, great fantasy asset, and hitting at the bottom of that lineup. And Austin Hayes is, you know, he's been slow. He's been real rough of late, but, you know, he can get hot at any moment. This team, if only they had a Trey Mancini, you know, that would have really it's one of those things where it's like they made that trade and I was a little upset because they're in the thick of things, but I get it. And they have other players they can call up to do it. But this is the division. It's a lot of fun to watch. And I'm sorry, if you're like a Marlins fan or a team that's like, oh, like if you're an Oakland fan, which there's like six of you as well. So between the six Marlins fans, six Oakland fans, there's 12 of us. But like you're a team like that. That has no chance of making the playoffs. You have to root for the Orioles. You have to. And your Giants are kind of pushing back up. You know, they're above 500. They can push for a wild card spot, but it's going to be tough for them. It's such a loaded NL, you know?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think they've won like five in a row, at least at the time of this recording. But they're still like four games back of a wild card spot. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, that's going to be another uphill battle, but yeah, we'll see if they can get back into that wild card mix.
And right now, even what's sad is Milwaukee, it looks like. It can't be. They shouldn't be out of it. Oh, it's okay, the way it's showing it. I was looking at this app, and it's showing Milwaukee out of it. I'm like, wait a minute, aren't they winning their division? Like, that doesn't make no, St. Louis is. I lied. That's right. The Cardinals are winning their division. That caught me off guard. I forgot that. Yeah, that's where. Okay, so right now, because it's the NL is kind of loaded at the top. The Padres are holding on to that. The Padres and the Phillies are holding on to those final wild card spots, with Milwaukee and San Fran being the first two in or out, or first two out, with Milwaukee being just one game out. So Milwaukee's gonna. You have to be rooting for Milwaukee, because if Milwaukee can somehow squeeze out the Padres, at least if the Giants don't go, the Padres might not be able to, right? Like, you can root for that. But they're three games. It's weird. They're one game out, but they're three games. But I don't understand how that works. I guess one game out from their division. The way it's, again, the app I'm looking at, because I'm like, they have three less wins than the Padres. Anyway, we're way off topic, way off tangent, and we're supposed to make this a quick episode. I just get excited when you start getting to this final month and a half or so of the season, and it's like, oh, look, all this stuff is getting kind of cool to monitor. Anyway, back to the fantasy side of things. More news. Austin Meadows just can't catch any luck. I don't know if you had much of him this year. I know he's been a guy of ours in the past, but he's been taken off his rehab again with the Achilles. At this point, I'm not expecting him to be back. Man. Yeah. At this point, I'm not expecting him to be back this year. Maybe he becomes like one of those early draft, like post 300 picks that you kind of get early before the ADP creeps up. He'll probably not be a top one. He's probably going to be about around that pick 200 next year when everything settles, 250, just because playing time, middle of the lineup type bat probably for the Tigers. But all things considered, Austin Meadows, man, what a bummer.
Yeah, really disappointed this really disappointing season. But yeah, I can see that. I think you'd probably be closer to like that your post 250 range where it's like, oh well, you take a shot on the upside there. But yeah, just really unfortunate with the Achilles, and then earlier this season with the vertigo, or I'm not sure what exactly he was going through, but yeah, just kind of a wasted season. But I mean, he's still, just 27, so he'll be 28 next year. Enough time.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly. It's one of those things. Do you buy the bounce back? Do you buy the dip? And we're talking about, like, draft champions leagues, draft and holds, the type of leagues that you're drafting in November. Meadows becomes a guy that's very interesting because he could be like Naylor, where he just kind of falls. People forget about him. Pick 500-ish, because he's not going to be in that top. He's not going to be top rated. He's not going to be top ranked. This is when monitoring stuff at the end of the year gives you this advantage in early drafts, because Meadows is going to be a forgotten asset. And I doubt he enters Detroit next year, not as a starter at the very least, with the attempt to trade him. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think Meadows it's one of those guys where he's just kind of going to be forgotten because of injury. ADP will creep up as draft season goes, as people remember, oh, look at his name. I see this guy. I know this guy. He played, and he should be a starter, I would think, going into next year, because Detroit doesn't have any reason not to start him. Seth Beer, my guy, one of my guys, had a strong start to the year, super excited, and just hasn't done anything since. Sent back down. But the guy they called up for him, Stone Garrett, Never knew who this guy was. 26-year-old making his debut. So to me, that's like a non-prospect. But when you look at his numbers, they're pretty video game-ish in the minors. 2021, 25 home runs, 17 stolen bases. 2022, 828 home runs, 15 stolen bases in 17 attempts. The thing that also is noticeable is the last 2 years in the minors, Stone Garrett has improved his strikeout rates, which have been hovering around 30% the couple of years before that. Of course, he's a former Marlin, so he will succeed in another system. But Stone Garrett, very intriguing for one of these guys where if the playing time should be there, he's batting fifth in his debut, so lineup spot is there too. Why not chase the upside, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what he does. I mean, he was, you know, he is an older prospect. He was old for the levels, you know, 25 years old in AA last year. But I mean, yeah, the production was there this year, you know, 28 home runs in AAA, 15 steals. You worry where the, you know, how the strikeout rate is going to translate to the majors, because it was 23% this year in AAA. But yeah, I mean, really an intriguing profile for sure. I mean, if he can come up and it might be one of those where, you know, there's no book on him yet and could, you know, catch some lightning in a bottle for the last month and a half. We've seen it over and over again.
This is one of those things where right now I'm chasing anybody with upside. Like these, like I'll throw a couple dollars on them in Fab or grab them for a bench spot and see where it goes, because we're getting a bunch of call ups and there's a bunch of guys with upside. Like, here's the thing: Stone Garrett might have more rest of season value over Oswaldo Cabrera, who also got called up by the Yankees, but that's because Cabrera might not have the secure playing time. Now, you would think that they should give him a shot over a guy like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, but you don't know that for a fact. And tonight we see all of them in the lineup because DJ LeMahieu's out. So when LeMahieu returns, it'll be interesting to see how Cabrera factors if he's sent back down. But if Cabrera, the reason why I say Stone Garrett could have more relevance than Cabrera is because Cabrera could be sent back down now. If Cabrera stays up and gets the playing time, then obviously that's a moot point. But it's just one of those things where right now you just take a shot at it. But
right,
somebody
yeah,
would,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, Cabrera is, you know, regarded as a much higher-touted prospect. So I think, you know, that we mentioned it. We were talking about it a little bit before we started recording. But I think, yeah, I'm just worried with Cabrera that it might be like a Miguel Vargas situation where, you know, Vargas was just up while Turner was, dealing with some injuries. And, you know, right now DJ LeMahieu is pretty much day-to-day with that toe. And so, you know, maybe once he's good to go, we see Cabrera back down until, you know, maybe next month. So that's kind of the concern there with Cabrera just getting squeezed for playing time once LeMahieu's good to go. And whereas, you know, Garrett, yeah, he might not be as highly touted a prospect, but if he's going to get, you know, good opportunity to see what he can do, then he might end up carrying some more value here.
Yeah, we'll see. Like I said, if he can, it's all about playing time with him, obviously. And that's why I put that whole thing of like, let's watch the playing time with Cabrera, because if it's there, he's obviously a must get prospect type of guy. This Stone Garrett guy isn't, but another must get guy, as long as the playing time's there, Brett Beatty. He another top prospect for our organization, got called up batting eighth in his Mets debut at third base against the righty. So obviously he's a lefty, so I doubt they're going to platoon him, but you just never know. The Mets are platooning a bunch of people right now. And, well, what are you doing awake here? Yes, and I was podcasting. It's your bedtime. Drink some water. You can keep it. Here's a straw. Say hello, podcast world. Say it. They can hear in the microphone. Just say hi. All right. See, back in the day, I would just delete that. Or good night. You can leave juice in here for me. Yes. Okay. Well, I love you too. Okay. I used to delete those. Not sure if I'll delete that, George. I might just leave that in there for once.
Yeah, a little peek in the Curlin household.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my dog's in here. My kid wanted water. It's 9:30 at night. He's supposed to be sleeping. It's a school night. But he took a little nap on the way home. Kindergarten's been really rough on him, you know. So he has to take a nap on the way home from school every day, apparently. so he doesn't get to sleep on time. But he's tucked in. I had him ready for bed. He just doesn't want to go to bed, man. Kids, you know, whatever. Anyway, back to Brett Beatty. Because, you know, speaking of kids, Brett Beatty was called up, and he's younger than me, so he's a kid. God, that feels weird to say. Like, and as we get older, and these kids, so quote unquote, come up, you know. Anyway, he came up. He's, you know, again, one of their top prospects. And I pull up this page, look at his numbers, and for some reason, get him away. 19 home runs in Double A this year, 2 stolen bases. Didn't really get much of a Triple A sample, and got called up anyway. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Luis Guillorme is the guy that looks like he's out of playing time for at least now. He was, you know, he would have been the guy playing third base tonight most likely. So we'll see how the playing time shakes out. I don't think they'll platoon Beatty, but again, it goes back to just not being sure because the Mets have been platooning a lot of their players. I'm not sure how they view Beatty yet, but regardless, at the very least, a strong side platoon. We've seen how good Gorman can be with a strong side platoon as a rookie, so maybe Beatty has that type of potential, you know?
Yeah. We really saw this year, Brett Beatty and the minors had done in Double A, kind of, you know, tap into some of his power, kind of exploded for 19 home runs after hitting 12 last year. And you see his ground ball rate really take a dip there in the minors. So really interesting to see what he can do, because, yeah, he's one of the more exciting prospects that is getting.
Yeah, and Francisco Alvarez was another Mets prospect where we thought we could have possibly seen him by the end of the season, but unfortunately they actually brought him up to AAA and he has, you know, slowed down, hitting 176 with a 28.7% strikeout rate. So but the power is still showing up. So like between AA and AAA, Francisco Alvarez has 23 home runs and a little over 400 at bats. So the power is still there. It's just and for a catcher would be great, but he's just, you know, striking out too much and the batting average is there. So I don't know if we see Alvarez up. But, you know, seeing how aggressive they were with Beatty made me think of Alvarez. And unfortunately, Alvarez, I don't think, is going to get the playing time anytime soon. Last piece of news I want to cover before we get. And kind of some of this just kind of played into the whole what we're talking about tonight. But Kike Hernandez, he's back. And Jaren Duran is out of the lineup in the second night that Kike Hernandez is back. The first night, Hernandez played over Bogarts. Bogarts returned to the lineup. And I was watching this. I figured it was Duran that was going to be one who loses playing time. And it appears that would be the case. Now, maybe they ease Hernandez back and don't play him every day right away. But you got to think Duran right now is that guy on the outside looking in, which is weird considering this team is likely going to be losing or not making the playoffs at this rate. So why not let Duran play type of thing? But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Duran, you know, he's really slowed down. He came up and really looked like he was improving with, you know, kind of a change in his profile, hitting for more contact. Things were looking up, you know, from the get-go when he had gotten called up. But since the All-Star break, he's hitting 176, 247, 338, two home runs, no steals. That's in the last month since the All-Star break. So really slowing down there. So, yeah, I could definitely see Kike just kind of taking back over there in center field.
That's kind of where I'm at. That was one of our talking points tonight. So that we covered that. Peraza was one of our talking points tonight. We covered that. Luis Robert remains out. It sounds like it's still day to day.
That's so frustrating.
So I know, because it's like he gets on this hot run or does really well, and then just, you know, the way they block that slide. I was watching the replay. I get it. He blocked the base, but it gave him nowhere to put his arm, and that's why he jammed it right into his leg. So. It's one of those things where it's kind of just bad luck, I guess. Rami Gonzalez is up right now, though. I was a sucker for Rami in the preseason. I didn't really get any, though, because it was one of those like 50th round picks type of deal. I fell in love with a guy that made no sense to fall in love with him. And in AAA this year, Rami had four home runs with five stolen bases. So the power speed allure was there for me, but the issue has been the 34% strikeout rate he has in the minors. So I don't know how long Rami's going to get run. He is playing at shortstop tonight, though, which is, you know, they have a need there rest of season. So maybe they give Rami a little bit of a run, but the strikeouts are going to be an issue. But the power, and there's a power and speed skill set there. So somebody, I had this weird, like, he's only AL only, maybe the deepest of leagues if you're super desperate for any upside. But I don't know. That strikeout rate is not going to translate well. There's no chance. That's all. I just want to bring him up because I have this weird, like, it's one of those things where it's like I was in on him preseason, and I'm like almost like that random Soroka pick we laughed at on our tag team thing that we did, and Soroka might actually pitch for a month at this rate because he's you know, on his way back working rehab. So it's one of those things where it's like you weren't expecting it at this point, but you'll take it if it works out. That wasn't even on the notes though, so I just kind of went off the hip on that one. But what I wanted to talk about is the fact that we have AJ Pollock and Andrew Vaughn hitting top two in the lineup with Robert. I always do this. I give up. Lou Bob. Can we just call him Lou Bob?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Pollock's going to stay there for as long as Tim Anderson is out. You know, Tim Anderson dealing with the
I think he's out for the year, right?
I know it was like a 6-week timeline or something like that. So, I mean, we're looking at maybe, you know, basically the rest of the season. I think AJ Pollock's probably just going to lead off there the rest of the year. He's actually been producing pretty good there.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I don't think people realize how good he's been, and he's been hitting there for a while now. Yeah, but it's more, I guess, more so Andrew Vaughn's lineup spot improved because of this. He's been the big winner in terms of the lineup spot, getting back to that two spot. And he also has turned it on lately. So Andrew Vaughn's back to hitting well. I don't, but I, maybe this is one of those things where maybe they leave those two alone, but that assumes that La Russa is going to do something smart. I figured, you know, those guys are rolling, you leave them alone, you slot Robert back into the three spot or something, you know? But no, yeah. I mean, he's still batting Moncada fifth, so that's, well, this team doesn't have many options, I guess, because it's not like Grandal's doing anything. Or so, yeah, it honestly makes sense looking at this lineup, putting Robert third and slotting everybody down a spot, giving them a little depth here, keeping Vaughn and Pollock hitting where they're hitting type of thing. Adam Engel, I guess, is kind of like the main beneficiary in terms of center field play, but it should be short-lived. It sounds like, you know, the fact that Robert's still day-to-day.
Yeah, he's not on the injured list yet. Seems like it's not going to be an IL. I'm hoping, I mean, you know, sooner the better that he's back in.
Oh, so going back to the Rays real quick, this is one of the tougher ones to figure out, but Margot, kind of a daily guy. Wander definitely plays every day. So obviously Yu Chang will be out of the picture. It was Siri. I want to say Siri plays, but here's the problem. If Margot's back, Siri's been hitting very well for the Rays. So this is why I'm not sure what's going to happen, but you know, they have Harold Ramirez who's DHing. So that takes away one of the spots that were open for Siri to fill in, or Margot. You have Rosarena in right field. You have Brandon Lau playing second base / DHing. It's one of these teams where it's like, are they going to put Margot? You have Peralta against righties in there in left field. And so center field becomes between Siri and Margot. Against lefties, there's a spot for both of them because Peralta platoons. So I guess what I'm getting at is, do you think Siri holds on to that spot as long as he hits, basically? Because the Rays will let him probably just play it out while he's hitting. And I guess Isaac Paredes gets the hook there, I guess, because now first base against righties, you have G-Man Choi, and you have Brandon Lau. So Paredes probably gets a weak side platoon role. He might already be falling into one. His playing time was already kind of suspect. Just kind of one of those things like, what are we going to see here? I guess Jose Siri is probably the big like question mark, right? Or Margot, which one of them loses playing time if they are set on keeping Peralta, Rosarena, and Harold Ramirez in the lineup between two of the outfield spots and DH?
Man, I kind of gave up trying to figure out what the Rays do a long time ago. So
yeah, well, at least I mean, look at the lineup. Sorry.
Yeah, I figure Margot, once he's back, you know, he should take some of that time. I think kind of regardless of, I mean, I suppose they'll want to keep Siri in if he's still, you know, hitting well. But yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's tough. They went out and traded for Siri, but they also went out and traded for Peralta. And Peralta, I don't know what he's done since he's come over to the Rays, but I can look up, I guess, from the 2nd of August, roughly, right? That's when he probably came over. Hitting .282. He's doing well. And they keep hitting him in the top half of the top four in the lineup. Gosh, I can't speak. So I think they like him, and especially, again, as a platoon bat, so he'll get the strong side. Does Margot fall into a platoon? Does Siri become a fourth outfield type again, just like he was for the Astros? It's going to be frustrating because Siri has earned it, but it doesn't matter with the Rays. So, and of course, Harold Ramirez, that was why I was watching his playing time. And maybe it could change because Ramirez is DHing every day. Maybe Ramirez is the one who loses playing time and they use the DH for other stuff. So we'll see. There's a lot to watch here. Obviously, Paredes was already kind of losing playing time. Now I think he's set to lose even more because now, and being stuck on the weak side with G-Man Choi at first base, we saw Paredes hit against starting at first base against a lefty yesterday over Choi. So that situation seems more clear, but the Rays are going to Ray. I get that. But you look at this lineup and there's finally a sense of like, I have an idea of what's happening. Jose Siri's playing time with Margot back is the question mark. That's the only one I have now. And honestly, I have no answers because I don't know which one they're going to prefer at this point. I got nothing for that. So unfortunately, it's stuck like that. But a guy that has my attention, he has now started three straight. It was two straight coming into tonight. Three straight, all again. But he has yet to start against a lefty, so you have to understand that he is in a strong side platoon. Kerry Carpenter of the Detroit Tigers. He's batting in the middle lineup right now. He's batting fifth. I think he's been batting roughly in the middle lineup the last three games. And it's about time to give him a chance. 24 years old, and he kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I've never really heard of him. And not that we are huge prospect guys, but look at the power production in the minors in this year. I mean, he showed a little bit last year, 15 home runs and 461 plate appearances. This year, 30 home runs and in exactly 400 plate appearances, a 300 ISO, a 314 ISO or better in both AA and AAA, hitting at least 304 in both levels as well. That's Kerry Carpenter of the Tigers. He's hit 2 home runs since coming up. The strikeouts have been an issue, which he showed some strikeout issues in AA this year, corrected them in AAA, but 38% at the pro level. But it could be a, it could be almost like a Rhys Hoskins, like a Rhys Hoskins light, because look at that walk rate, 14.5% walk rate. So Kerry Carpenter is a guy that has that power, and he's hitting 333, but with a 500 BABIP. So I'm not expecting the batting average to stick, but more of an OBP guy still. He could be what we hoped Spencer Torkelson to be, just a solid power bat, and he's hitting the middle lineup. I'm intrigued. He's a lefty, so he'll definitely get the strong side of the platoon, which he currently already has in terms of at least what his playing time has been against righties already. So someone that has my attention, I just find very interesting. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, 30 home runs in the minors. I mean, I'm just – we saw, you know, he had 262 plate appearances in AA where he had a 6% walk rate and a 27% strikeout rate, and then 138 plate appearances in AAA where he had a basically a one-for-one walk-to-strikeout ratio, 12.3% to 12.3% over 138 plate appearances. So you kind of – wonder where that's going to settle in. But I mean, yeah, that big power output that he tapped into this year, I mean, you definitely think it's interesting. And yeah, if he's going to get the strong side of a platoon, I'd definitely like to see what he can do. Maybe not someone that I'm rushing to go out and get, but like in a 15 deep, you know, deeper 15 team league, I need some power. Maybe I, you know, throw a dollar on there and see what I have.
And Candelario was scratched, I think. I saw that, and the reason why I'm bringing that up is because we've seen, what's his face now, Cody Clemens start 2 games in a row, but he started at third base tonight. So if Candelario's set this time, we could see Cody Clemens maybe get a little bit of run. A very, very deep league guy as well. His playing time doesn't feel secure. He also offers, if you look at Clemens's minor league numbers, a little power, a little speed, not as flashy of the power, obviously, but hasn't really done much with his major league sample, but hasn't been given much of an opportunity. You would think this is a team that wants to see what they have in these young guys, and Clemens has been a guy that just has Clemens has played 2 of 3 now, excuse me, both at third base. So Candelario is dealing with a non-COVID illness, so it's probably short term anyway, but again, just a guy to watch out for if there's playing time and you're desperate AL only. This is like your deep AL only type of take a stab at him type of deal. No real mixed league relevance yet unless the playing time becomes more consistent. Victor Reyes was the last guy I wanted to bring up. He has started 6 straight now, batting 2nd. Victor Reyes is an old favorite of the podcast as well, somebody that we've liked in the past for a little bit of pop, a little bit of speed as well. A skill set, if you haven't noticed, is always intriguing to people. So Victor Reyes, especially the speed side of things, should play well. Hasn't really done it this year with only 1 stolen base, but you know it's there and you know it's a potential. He stole that base 3-4 games ago now, including tonight. So obviously, hopefully he can get started on the running side of things and provide some boost there. Yeah, that's about it for the Tigers. What do you think about this whole Cedric Mullins platooning thing? That caught me off guard. I didn't realize he was that bad against lefties this year, but it's happening, it looks like.
Yeah, it looks like he's been sitting against lefties, and I mean, I didn't realize how bad it was, but a 568 OPS against southpaws. So, I mean, I guess I kind of get it.
That's good, right?
That's good. Yeah, he's hitting 568. It's his OPS, though.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, I mean, he's producing just fine, you know, not too far from what we kind of expected. 11 homers, 25 steals, hitting .263, 61 runs, 49 RBI. I mean, it's kind of about he's pacing for about what we expect. Maybe, you know, obviously a dip in the power.
Yeah, the less power than I expected.
Yeah, and the batting average there, but not too far off from what we were kind of expecting anyway. So, I don't know. I don't even know what to do with that.
Yeah, so right now it looks like, so if you look at the against lefties, what's his name, Cedric Mullins, that's his name, that's the guy we're looking at, he has sat against 2 straight The last one he started against 3 games ago, he batted 8th. So he already dropped in the lineup against lefties. So that kind of gave me like, oh, my ears perked up. Like, okay, there's something there. And now he sat 2 straight since in favor of Ryan McKenna, who was leading off and playing center field. So obviously they found a platoon partner. But the issues, the lefty playing time has started, you know, there started to be a little bit of warning signs there back about 7 games ago. Is it 1, 2? He's only started 3 of the last 8 against lefties. So obviously the playing time against lefties, and there was times where he took breaks against lefties throughout the year prior. So we should, you know, maybe it shouldn't be such a surprise, but I guess I kind of viewed Mullins as an everyday guy, regardless of his struggles. And but obviously Baltimore does not. So be aware that it seems like Mullins is platooning. So if he has a heavy slate against lefties, he might be a sit. Even I mean, unless you're desperate for speed, maybe you hope for a pinch hit deal. But it's one of those things where I don't think you can start him with any confidence if there's lefties on the slate. KC, kind of the last AL situation we're going to talk about, the outfield. I just don't know what to make of it because they've managed to make it work lately with all 3 of the guys. I'm trying to pull up the lineup from today, see what they did. So Nate Eaton, Michael A. Taylor, and who's the other one? Not, well, Brent Rooker's factoring in now. But, Kyle Isbell. Those 3 guys have been, like, kind of mix and matching. I don't know why they still feel so the need to start Taylor when this is a team that needs to see what they have in Isbell and Eaton and other guys. So it's aggravating because, like, tonight Isbell's out of the lineup. Eaton's in. And you've seen Eaton and Isbell actually alternate. You've seen Isbell get some run. You've seen Eaton take a back seat. And Taylor consistently plays, even though I think he shouldn't at this point, but ultimately, is there anybody here you want in the situation, or are you just kind of avoiding it because it's just such a frustrating thing to monitor, deal with? I think you're muted, George. You're muted.
There we go. Sorry, there was some dogs barking outside, so I completely forgot I was muted.
That's fantastic.
No, I was just saying, like in your typical mixed league, I think this is just something to avoid. I mean, because you even have NJ Melendez getting starts in right field, mm-hmm. too, so... There's just so many guys rotating in those spots. You have no idea. It doesn't look like there's anyone consistently in there every day. I mean, maybe if anyone, you know, like you mentioned, Isbell and Eaton are kind of the guys that more or less, and Taylor as well, but they'll mix in Rooker and give Melendez starts out there. Enoch Prado has started in left field. So
it's a mess.
It is.
It's frustrating though, because I don't know why they feel the need to get Brent Rooker in there and Taylor when you have maybe Rooker, because at least Rooker's still young. I get that. I think he is. I'm gonna look it up. I haven't seen that. I just feel like maybe we've seen a lot of him because of just throughout the years we've seen him playing a lot. But he's not that young. No, he's not young enough at all. There's no reason why Rooker should be playing over Eaton or Isbell. There's no reason why Taylor should be playing over Eaton or Isbell. That's just my opinion. I don't see why you don't let these young guys get some run and see what you got there going into next year. Rooker and Taylor can't possibly be part of the long-term plans for this team. So I don't know. I don't get it. I'm just frustrated because, like, Kyle Isbell, he did start 3 in a row heading into tonight. Playing time has been trending up, and Eaton has now played 3 of 4. Sorry, 4 or 5, but now it spells out. See, it's like they're doing this rotation. You mentioned Melendez gets in there right field. And on a night like tonight, usually what they've been doing, instead of Rooker getting left field, they've actually been putting Prado into left field to keep him in the lineup. So it's like, it's becoming almost like a mini Rays situation where it's like just the outfield at least. Like the rest of the stuff's pretty consistent, but it's been like the outfield has just been a headache to deal with. And it's hard to nail down who's going to get the playing time. And a lot of these guys are hard to start with any confidence for play appearances. Like, like if there's 7 games, you're lucky if Isbell and Eaton play 4 of them. I think you can start them in a 7-game week, expecting about 4 starts and hope and anything more is better or is better than expected. But it's frustrating because these guys have skill sets that are very intriguing. They all have this power and speed skill set. I think Eaton's been running too, if memory serves. I'd have to look up his skill, his stuff, but I think I looked at it earlier and I think he's been running. I'm looking up KC right now as a whole. Like last 7 days, KC, Eaton has 2 stolen bases. Isbell has 2 stolen bases. And this is just the last 7 games. So these guys are both running and these guys could be huge help in stolen bases, but the playing time isn't consistent. So if you're trotting them out there, like right now, over the last 7 days as well, those guys have 15 and 16 play appearances respectively, Isbell and Eaton do. But the average everyday guy has like 25 plus play appearances. So they're getting like 10 less play appearances than the average starter on this team. So you have to know that if you're starting them, you're going for stolen bases and the upside's limited because they're likely to get that much less play appearances than the average starter on this team, as at least how it's been playing out lately. So just worth mentioning and bringing up. This situation is frustrating, and there's no real answer right now. So yeah, that's going to do it for this, the lineup stuff. We can talk real quick about the bullpens. I gave you free reign. I'm like, you're the bullpen guy. You have your notes. I have zero idea what you're going to bring up tonight. So enlighten me.
No, yeah, just going to go over some of these situations. Yep. Just because I don't think we've done this kind of talk since the trade deadline. But, you know, basically Felix Bautista has taken over there in Baltimore. He's up to 7 saves. And, yeah, I mean, he's been a good one. In Boston, a mess as usual. They're kind of, you know, been a committee all year. And now with Tanner Houck on the injured list, you know, they're still using Whitlock, you know, multiple innings here and there. If the situation calls for it, he'll get the save. Matt Barnes is back in there. He just got a save. And then John Schreiber also in the mix for saves. So really, really hard to just kind of nail one guy there. I mean, yeah. So just a situation to avoid completely. New York with Clay Holmes on the injured list. And you could kind of see the writing on the wall for a bit before he went on the injured list too, that maybe his time was coming to an end as the closer there for the Yankees. But you got to wonder, you know, Chapman, is he going to kind of take the lead there? Aaron Boone did say that he would go with Chapman and Scott Efros, who the Yankees got from the Cubs at the trade deadline, as kind of co-closers going forward. But hey, I mean, if Chapman struggles, you know, Efros has been awesome. And if Chapman, you know, if his struggles kind of come back on him, you think, you know, does that mean maybe Efros could take the lead as closer sometime over, you know, these last 7 weeks? I think he might be a worthy, you know, speculative pickup. I think I picked him up for $1 in the Scarf League this last week, just to see. So yeah, Efros and Chapman there in New York. Tampa Bay, Jason Adam got the last 2 saves for the Rays, but I mean, the Rays will do this. Could be Brooks Raley with 2 saves next week, or Colin Pache or Pete Fairbanks. I mean, Jason Adam has been the best reliever there all season. He's down to a 1.13 ERA, 32 strikeout rate. But I mean, 7 saves. You got Brooks Raley with 6, Colin Pache with 7. It doesn't seem like anyone's really going to take the lead there. So I'm not sure I would look too much into Jason Adam getting the last 2 saves. And then, yeah, the Twins looks like they're just, you know, going with Jorge Lopez there, who they took traded with the Orioles at the trade deadline. Joan Duran kind of taking a step back as a setup man. They also picked up Michael Fulmer. So, you know, they kind of solidified the back end of their bullpen there with Lopez, Fulmer, and then with Duran taking the seat back. And yeah, you saw the Angels move on from Raisel Iglesias, moving him to the Braves at the trade deadline. Kind of got another committee here going on, but I think the best guy here is probably Jose Quijada. He got the last save for the Angels. He's down to a 2.96 ERA, about 30% strikeout rate. And then Jonathan Hernandez with the Rangers. Hernandez, someone who kind of popped in the 2020 shortened season. He was pretty impressive then when he transitioned as a starter from a starter to the bullpen, kind of flashed in 2020 before, unfortunately, undergoing Tommy John surgery before 2021. But he's back, and it looks like he's taking the lead there with the Rangers as the closer. He has 2 of the last 3 saves after pitching back-to-back nights. He got the night off with Jose Leclerc picking up a save, and then Jonathan Hernandez was back in there the next day for the save. So if Hernandez is available anywhere out there, I'd be definitely scooping him.
You heard it from the man himself. A lot of uncertainty. It's almost like bullpens are being treated like lineups these days. That's why there's such a need for this content, honestly. The way people monitor, like, I monitor lineups like crazy and the reason why I do 3 to 4 write-ups a week is because so much changes any given day. And, like, for instance, the Giants, a guy, we didn't talk about this, but real quick, the Giants optioned Luis Gonzalez. And this is like after a weekend, this is like after like a month or two of me saying, hey, I don't know why, but Luis Gonzalez is an everyday player for this team. He's one of the few that gets rare days off and plays even against lefties as a lefty. And they decided to option him. I mean, they did sit him like 2 straight before optioning him. So maybe there was some writing on the wall, but it also made sense because of the fact that he probably is one of the few that had options left, and he has been slowing down compared to the other guys. So I get the move, but it's just one of those things where it's like, it goes to show you that when you think something is secured, it's really not. I mean, and right now, this time of year especially, there's so many moving parts any given day with these guys coming up from the minors and all that, that stuff's super important. And it's like a reminder of why, honestly, maybe me and you need to be better at podcasting, because our content that we cover would be something that like other podcasts cover. But the fact that we focus on it could help people more, because that's kind of all we talk about. And with the occasional interruption from a dog or a kid or an ambulance, no big deal.
Yeah.
That's going to do it, though, man. We wrapped that one up pretty quick. George, fun talking to you. You can follow George on Twitter at Roto_Nino, myself at Mike_Curland. And don't forget, check us out on SK Playbook over at patreon.com/SK Playbook. The website's pretty much not utilized anymore. That was just too much. I'm not going to lie. So no more website. We're going to stick with the Patreon and utilize that as our website. But again, check out what we have going on over there as we transition to advanced football and all that, which for those who play, we'll be covering some of that content as well. So anything worth mentioning, George, on your way out, or we're just going to call it a night?
I think we're good, man. Yeah, we'll do this again soon.
Hopefully. All right. We'll talk soon, buddy. Have a good one.